Welcome to the GeoMob Podcast, where we discuss geo-innovation in any and all forms, whether for fun or profit. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the GeoMob Podcast. This should be a very fun episode. I have with me as my guest, Yussi Ahoa, who is based in Berlin, has worked in the geospatial sector, and he wrote a very interesting article that I came across about a month ago about an experience he had a couple years ago where, you know, working on navigation services for delivery riders on bikes, he actually went and became a delivery rider for a month or so to really get the full experience and learn how the service was you know, could be used and to benefit this this user group. So I thought that was a fantastic tale of going kind of undercover and really learning the details of last mile delivery. So I wanted to get him right here on the podcast to tell us about his experience. So welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's awesome to be here.
To give us your background and what you do in geospatial, and then let's get into your article.
Yeah, sure. So I'm originally from Finland. Been living in Berlin for many years, but I got my start into the sort of geospatial and location powered world back in Finland when I joined Nokia. Originally working on location based advertising, or it was actually called Navtech at the time. Some people might remember the name Navtech. But we worked on location-based advertising, which was supposed to be the next big thing back then for basically every year. Didn't quite catch on, but this was back in 2010. Then I joined Nokia when the two companies merged. That brought me to Berlin, where I first worked on the release management of the Nokia Maps applications, so Nokia Maps and Drive, Nokia Transit. Then eventually moved into product management, and this is where I would say I really found my calling, first of all with product management that I really enjoy, but also I got to work with building new solutions for last mile delivery. So looking at how location services can power last mile delivery, as well as the last meter part of the supply chain, which is a super fascinating problem. And this is, by this time, the company had already turned into Here Technologies, as we know it now. So that's where I spent quite a few years working on these last mile delivery solutions. Currently, I work as a senior product manager at a company called Up42, which I think you might also be familiar with already.
We've had members of the team here on the podcast in the past.
Yeah, so. Exactly. So we're a geospatial platform, which we aim to help companies get access to satellite data for various different use cases. So I've always sort of been in this geospatial domain one way or the other, working on some sort of projects. That's how I got to my start in this area, and that's how I became to be in Berlin.
Very, very nice. Well, let's get into your article. So you wrote this article recently, but the actual experience that you described, it was several years ago. It was during the pandemic, if I understood correctly. And as you said, the last meter use case is a fascinating one. And particularly with the bike delivery guys, this is something new in the sense of, you know, I remember it's only kind of in the last 10 years that now we have these guys all over town continually trying to deliver things. And so you went out and actually became a rider, a delivery guy. Is that that's correct?
Yeah, that's correct. So maybe a bit of background to that, why this came to be, this project. So like I mentioned, we were building solutions for last mile delivery, dispatching and optimization specifically. So last mile is considered to be the most expensive part of the supply chain. And so it's really about trying to find improvements through maximizing the efficiency of the workforce and the fleets.
Did you tell them you were doing this, or you just signed up like any other writer? I mean, they didn't know you were doing this as a kind of product development kind of research project.
Well, actually, so I wanted to sign up first as a van driver, but that didn't really work out with my full-time job because it didn't provide enough flexibility. So then I just signed up as anyone would on a food delivery platform. So basically did it online, picked up the delivery bag, and that was basically it. But it did come up when chatting with the other drivers, of course, outside restaurants and these kind of things. So eventually my cover was blown. But it did come up.
Okay, so take us through some of the challenges. I mean, some I can guess, just, I mean, it's obviously a physically demanding job because you're moving around. But like, what are some of the geospatial challenges that you came with, both some that, you know, you expected, but perhaps also some that you didn't expect?
Yeah, so I think one of the challenges that I discovered immediately in the first shift was the quality of bike routing. So that was sort of something I was expecting, but it was still surprising. Like I mentioned in the article, I had to, in my mind, I had the perfect setup. I had a dedicated phone for navigation that I've loaded with all the navigation apps that I could think of, and specifically for bike routing. But still, when I like set out to make the first delivery, it was really guided me through all the biggest streets with most traffic, and ignored all the actual bike paths for some reason. So that was a bit of a challenge. And the other thing is that it doesn't really, in all places at least, and with all providers, doesn't consider things like cobblestones, which is a nightmare when you're delivering on a bike. So you have the heavy bag on your back full of glass bottles, you know, going up to the fourth floor. But before that, you're just jumping around on the cobblestones trying to dreaming of a smooth pavement. So that's one thing that would make a lot of difference if you could avoid those kind of streets.
You were on just a pedal bike or an electric bike?
Yeah, I was on a traditional bike because I wanted to really feel the pain. I felt like an e-bike would be a bit of cheating in that case. Also, I wanted to get some exercise while I was doing this, so that's why. But that was also a bit of a surprise to me as to like how many kilometers it actually racks up in one, even a short shift, because you're really like the distances can be quite long.
Do you think is this a software problem in that like it's not grouping the deliveries together well, or is it more just that's just the nature of the orders just come in totally randomly on you?
Yeah, I thought about that a lot. I mean, this is of course something that these companies really don't open up too much, because the food delivery companies specifically, I think, are technology first, and they love to build their own platforms, and they're all about, you know, optimization through technology. So whatever algorithms and optimization they use is really their secret. But I was trying to observe through the application and what the logic was, how they grouped the orders. And I think there had to be some sort of like demand forecasting, some sort of zoning, because the drivers would have a starting point given with the shift. So I think they are able to do a demand forecasting as to like which areas are the most busiest at what times, and then allocate enough drivers to that area. So I think there was a lot of that logic going on. And I think one thing that I noticed that was a bit painful for me as a rider sometimes is that they had these areas that if I started in Mitte, so this is for people in Berlin, might know this area. So started in Mitte, had the first delivery in Prenzlauberg, then you wouldn't be able to escape that area. So all the new deliveries would come from there. So you would then stuck on the cobblestones and the hilly roads.
But in theory, that should be good, right? That you stay in one area. I mean, obviously, the area itself might be difficult, but in theory, I mean, it wouldn't make sense if you crisscrossing Berlin all the time. I mean,
yeah, exactly. And that's, I think, for the company, for the efficiency, that would be great because you have the rider there. But this is, I think, where also the human factor comes in, that the rider is really sometimes suffering because they have to stay in that area with the most difficult delivery locations.
What, you know, one thing that always fascinates me, the the vast majority of writers that I see are obviously foreigners, right? And typically actually very new to the city.
Yeah.
And you know, perhaps not native and are not good German speakers. So and this is the case also in other cities, you know, that. And I'm like, my God, I mean, imagine if I went to some other city on the other side of the world and all of a sudden had to start, you know, driving around. It's not just the delivery and the pain of that, but it's also, you know, doing all this in a completely foreign culture. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so hard.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Definitely. And that's where it was interesting, like, the experience curve when you start off when your first shift, you're, even though I had lived in Berlin for years and I sort of knew the areas, but I still struggled. Like when the application said gave me a street name, I was like, where on earth is this street? So it felt like I'd never heard of this street. Then you always had to go to the map because the map wasn't integrated in the rider application. But eventually you start to get the hang of it and you start to remember the most popular restaurants and the best routes. So that sort of knowledge builds up. And that's also, I think, one of the challenges in Last Meter is that this knowledge builds up in the rider's head, but there's really no way to capture that well so that it would benefit other riders.
And what about the, from a usability standpoint, I mean, you're on a bike. Obviously, this could be in the winter. It's rainy. It's cold. You know, what were the issues there? Because I kind of, you know, sometimes I see these guys trying to ride the bike and play with the phone. You know, and as you say, they've got a heavy backpack on. So yeah, it's really not optimal.
No, and I think that's that was super interesting as a product manager to also get that sort of layer of emotional understanding of how the people would potentially use your application outside in the field. So imagine you're in the office on a whiteboard with the designers thinking like, oh, this looks like a smooth UX and this might feel like, you know, you got it. But then you go out in the field and you're really like, for example, the customer was able to message you. And before you were able to do anything else with the application, you had to respond to the customer's message. You were not able to dismiss
it. Oh, I see.
So if you were... Yeah, if you're writing and you get this message, you don't see the address anymore until you stop and type something in, and then the message goes away. So these type of things, you really understand, like every click when it's raining and windy and stark and you just want to, you know, deliver, every additional click is really a frustration.
So take us through some of the other kind of actual core geospatial challenges. I mean, like, what did you learn about routing, the geocoding? Take us through these kind of things.
Yeah, so I think one of the biggest challenge was having the street address match the entrance. So obviously, the street address takes you to the sort of, the location of the building, but that's only the sort of halfway there when you're delivering. And then you have to go into the courtyard where you might have four different buildings, different entrances. You don't have any understanding which is the right entrance. So this is the fundamental last meter problem. And in this case, a lot of the times, like I mentioned in the article, it was actually the customer hanging from the window yelling at me, you know, which is the right door, because they saw me bouncing around in the yard. So that was the last meter guidance that I got in real life. But I think capturing that kind of information would be valuable.
But can I ask why? I mean, you, clearly, obviously, the customer wants their delivery, right? So they have a strong incentive to put accurate information in. But is it an issue that the app is not able to, doesn't allow them to put this information in? Or is it that somehow it's not getting passed along the chain? Because I have had situations like this where I wanted to get something delivered, and the app, you know, only lets me put the house number. It doesn't let me put exactly as you say, like which courtyard and which. And it's super frustrating. It's frustrating for me. It's frustrating for the delivery guy. It's frustrating. But I've also had the opposite where, you know, the app or the website or whatever does a good job of letting you put that information in. And then, you know, then the delivery comes and the people are calling me and they're like, what floor is it on? And of course I tell them, but I'm always like, you know, I put all this information in. And so recently this happened to me, and I asked the guy, and the problem was, you know, that chain, that data transfer chain from the website through to, I guess, you know, the logistics center to the, and it's a subcontractor of a subcontractor of a subcontractor who actually does the delivery, and the data just doesn't make it through the chain, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's, so there's a bit of a difference, I think, in last mile when it comes to, like, if it's a like a parcel delivery, when you order something from Amazon, right. This is exactly how you described it. It's a subcontractor of a subcontractor, and it's a lot of traditional companies might be working still with pen and paper or Excel spreadsheet handling the dispatching and optimization, but I think food delivery platforms, they have more control over the whole stack, and they own the, like, optimization and the customer data directly. So it's just a bit easier for them, I think. But still the problem remains that some applications allow the customer to add a pin to the actual entrance. But, like, for example, in my own address, we live, our building is like between two streets, and our pin is exactly in the middle. But for some reason, somehow, the navigation point always snaps to the wrong street on the other side of the building. Yeah, and the driver is always calling us, like, I'm on this street, like, where is the building? And it's like, no, it's wrong, yeah, wrong street.
Nightmare.
Yeah.
Huh. What, and so any thoughts on the routing side of things? I mean, what did you learn there?
Yeah, so routing, well, routing and navigation, of course, like I mentioned, bike routing was still lacking. It is a bit better for parcel delivery. So I also tried our own application with what we were building, just driving around town, doing like fake deliveries, planning these routes. And I think for cars, like incident management and getting that sort of real-time traffic information is a bit easier than for what is like more bike specific. I think that data is not quite there yet.
So I think that was one question. Were you trying just one specific app? I mean, the app that you were working on, or was it you were trying all different services, or I mean, did you notice any significant differences across the services, or were they all kind of had the same challenges?
I tried multiple different apps because the rider application didn't have any like inbuilt navigation, so I had obviously here was one of the providers, but I tried also more bike specific ones, and some were better than others, but I think like no one really mastered that, so I think there's a lot of room for improvement also just on the bike routing side of things.
Well, this is quite challenging because I mean, we were talking before we started recording. I went to a presentation this week at Better Mile, and the woman giving the presentation, who I'm hoping to have speak at a future GMOB Berlin, she talked about how they had developed their bike routing app, specifically targeting this demographic of delivery drivers, bike delivery drivers. And they had done quite a lot of testing where they got everyone in the team to ride their bikes around and try it out for a month or so. And, you know, she talked about there's such a gap between what the data shows as being correct and versus the actual emotional perception of a route. And it's very, very difficult to capture that in data. And so she cited the example specifically of, you know, one woman in the team was riding, and it was kind of the evening, and the, you know, the routing software had her go through a park, which, you know, I guess often would be the correct, you know, and most pleasant way to ride. But it was kind of dark and it looked a little sketchy. And so this woman says, like, I didn't feel safe going down that route. And, you know, it'd be very hard to capture this, right, with data. And so I don't know, any insights that you gained of how to, any thoughts on that challenge? Because I just see it as so hard.
Yeah, definitely. It is hard. Like having that sort of layer on top of the data is super difficult. And like I mentioned, collecting also the information on the last meter, like that sort of silent knowledge that the riders have, and also just considering the needs of the riders, uh, the, the break rooms, the toilets, open toilets, is also a challenge. And I don't think that sort of data layer exists, at least to the extent that it would be available in these applications. But it's a very good point, like that kind of layer is also really caters more to the human aspect of this work, because what really makes this industry tick is the actual people making the actual deliveries. So we might be thinking, you know, of the data and the efficiency of the routing, but there's also that component of the actual person working the job that needs to be considered.
Have you given any thought? I mean, you know, one idea that comes up continually is exactly as you say, the riders have the experience, you know, they live the experience of going that particular route. And then also they gain knowledge over time. And how can we capture that data somehow quickly and easily and get it back into the system, right? And from what I've heard, it's exceptionally challenging because, first of all, the rider is, you know, busy doing their job. But second of all, you know, again, this issue of, you know, the subcontractor of the you know, like who owns this data and how do you pass it back up the chain? And obviously in you have the whole issue of how closely you're monitoring the employee, whether that's kind of a privacy issue or not, you know. So what are your thoughts on all that?
Yeah, I'm not sure if I know there are advances being made in this field, and some companies have interesting concepts, and we also try to crack it. But like you said, it's really difficult because it really has to happen like hands-free for the driver, because they have their hands full with the actual job. So it cannot be that they would be entering any information on entrances manually. And I think there's also an aspect of privacy, like mapping residences and connecting that with the actual location information is super sensitive, especially in Germany. But like having some way of tracking these delivery pads automatically in the background could be one way to solve it. But again, considering the privacy aspect. And I think one challenge also is that these delivery fleets, they basically work with bring your own device. So they're not working with the company devices, which makes it also a bit more difficult to sort of unify the tools that they use and make sure that they use the tools that are provided. And also it has to train on the device, like they have to survive the whole day with that device. And so if there's something super power hungry in the background collecting data, it also is a challenge.
Good point. Yeah, I mean, actually, then another presentation at the same event was a company that's specializing now in building these kind of electric, I guess technically it's a bike, but it kind of almost looks like a little mini truck. You know, so it's actually covered, so that you're protected from the weather, and it, you know, has a big kind of cargo area in the back, and I'm not sure this would make sense for food delivery, but for kind of parcel delivery, and it's expensive, right? You have to buy these vehicles, but then you would have a better rider experience, and hopefully also much better. You're able to track the vehicle better. You're able to create a unified kind of experience. What is your thought? I mean, some people are trying to solve this problem just by eliminating it, right? So that instead of delivering to the customer's door, we deliver to like a parcel station in their neighborhood, right? And that way, you know, the parcels, I solve all these problems of having to go up to the fourth floor, you know, and getting lost. And what are your thoughts on that? Is that a viable solution or?
I think so, yeah, because I think the trend or the demand from the customers over the years have been not just getting the fastest delivery, but more convenient delivery. So everyone can imagine, you know, you're working from home, you're on a call, you have the Amazon delivery guy ringing the doorbell exactly in the middle of your call because they provide the time window, you know, arrives by 9 p.m. So personally, I also use the Amazon locker on my street because it's super easy. It's like, it's there when I want to pick it up and that's it. And I also get the fresh air that I need daily. working from home mostly. So I think these kind of solutions are like becoming more and more popular.
Okay, so wrapping up here, man. I mean, I guess you wrote this article a couple of years ago. You lived the experience a couple of years ago. So are you still keeping tabs on how this space is developing? Are you every time you get on your bike now, do you flip back into delivery mode, and do you see things getting better, or what's your impression?
Yeah, so I follow the space closely, and like I'm super interested in logistics as a problem, especially how the geospatial aspect of it can bring efficiency. Just want to mention, like, I'm a big fan of aviation, and I think we could do another session on just talking about aviation, but aviation has a lot of aspects that I also find interesting in my own job. So, for example, these micro optimizations that you might be familiar that, you know, airlines switching the paper manuals in the cockpit to iPads, or switching out the in-flight magazines to thinner paper, saving weight. And these are like improvements that might seem very small, but when you scale it up over thousands and thousands of flights, you get the fuel efficiency, which really then starts to make a difference. And I think similar to logistics, there's a lot of room to improve with technology and geospatial technology in particular, because it's fundamentally a geospatial problem. It's very much a geospatial problem. And that's why this intersection of logistics and technology and product management is like super interesting space to be in. And there's a lot of difficult problems to solve, and they have a huge impact on just everyday lives of everyone. You know, better optimizing delivery routes means also less traffic in the cities, less cost for everyone, more sustainable transport. So it's a super interesting space, and I'm definitely keeping an eye on how it advances.
That's a very good point. Yeah, what I liked so much about this article is that, though, also how you actually, you know, got up away from the desk and went out and lived it, and you immediately then see these little details that seem like minor things, but actually make such a big difference. And one of the things, I think it's easy for all of us in geospatial to forget, you know, we have so much data, and we're sitting at the computer and wrangling the data. And I guess it's perverse, because obviously by definition, geospatial data is about the real world, but it's easy to kind of forget the real world, you know, and actually go out and see how it's used. And I guess in some ways it's similar to this issue that we talked about the data being passed through the chain of subcontractors. So many people in geospatial, I think, you know, they're insulated, you know, they're working on the problem, but then there's a product manager, and then maybe there's like a customer success manager, mm-hmm. or whatever. Like, they're very insulated from the end user, let's say.
Yeah.
And so I really like that you went out and lived it. And that's something I encourage everyone to take to heart and think about how they can do a bit better, because there are so many insights that come up. So,
yeah, absolutely. I would also encourage everyone to get outside from the whiteboard and really live the experience. It was really an awesome experience. And I would have continued it also, but the company I work for stopped operations. Like I mentioned in the article, unrelated events, not because of me working there 2 months.
All right, man. Well, again, Jussi, I appreciate you coming on the show and telling your story, and hope to see you at GeoMob Berlin. So maybe we'll get you to give a talk about some of this. But if people, obviously in the show notes, we're going to link the article and people should read that. But what's the best way for people to get in touch with you if they'd like to learn more?
Yeah, so I'm always happy to connect with people in the industry and people who are solving these kind of problems, super interested in seeing how things advance. So, you know, feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn. That's the best way to find me. I'm not sure when this episode will be out, but I will definitely be at the next GeoMob in Berlin. So Might see people there as well. But yeah, definitely looking forward to connecting with people.
Thanks very much, man. See you soon.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me on.
Thanks for joining us today on the GeoMob podcast. We hope you enjoyed the discussion. You can get the show notes over on the website, which is at thegeomob.com. And while you're there, you can sign up for our monthly newsletter and find links to our accounts on Mastodon and LinkedIn, so that you can stay up to date on all our upcoming events. We hope to see you at an event soon.